The president says the war in Iran is under control, maybe even winding down. But Pete Hegseth says, we're just getting down to business, and you ain't seen nothing yet. Twice in 2 weeks, Islamic terrorism rears its ugly head in the U.S. Just business as usual in a time of war, or something much deeper? Greg Gutfeld says he's done being politically correct. And the Fargo City Commission gets a candidate that says we need some good old-fashioned business principles to be successful. Good morning, my friend. Great to be here with you for a Let's Get Some Business Done edition of the Steve Holcim Show. Got to be the happy warriors. Never let them steal your joy and your optimism, but don't be afraid to fight. We're going to do a little bit of that on the program here today. Hope that you'll be able to join us in whatever way works for you, whether it is just listen to the program. Appreciate you being here. Whether you want to get involved and make a comment, heard, or ask a question, hope you do that too. 701-271-1100, the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. You can also email us, studio@flagfamily.com. You can text us as well, 701-237-1590. I'm coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, drivewithvision.com. A whole bunch of stuff about the war today, but a whole bunch of new stuff came out yesterday and actually this morning. Pete Hegseth had a masterful 5 minutes today. We'll play that for you before the show ends here today. I had a little scripture, a little prayer at the end. It was absolutely fantastic. Just makes me so glad we have this bunch of people running things. The president spoke yesterday on the war, and the stock market took off. So we'll get into that as well today. Scott Brecky will be with us. He's a candidate for Fargo City Commission. He's on the Fargo Liquor Control Board, and he says that he looks forward to bringing his business expertise to the city and maybe even getting rid of special assessments. So this automatically perks up our ears. We'll talk about that. We now know the full NDSU schedule for the first year of FBS football. And one college football analyst says the Bison are going to be favored in every single game. One of only a few teams, Notre Dame, Georgia, and the Bison. So we'll talk about that. Could the Bison go undefeated their first year in the FBS? Come on now. That's crazy talk. Or is it? We'll dive into that. Best thing I heard all day was Greg Gutfeld on the Five yesterday, keeping it very, very real when it comes to Islamic terrorism. And I'm trying to sort a little bit of this out in my head as well. I'll let you sort of walk along with me on this. And certainly glad to have your wisdom here. We've got the smartest group of people and the most godly group of people, the wisest group of people that I could hope to talk with on a daily basis. So certainly looking for your perspective on this. Boy, it sure looks like there's going to be nobody that is among, well, okay, I shouldn't say it that way. It looks like we're going to be minus just about everybody who's got significant brand identity at the state Republican convention coming up later this month in Minot. Just about all the people that we've heard of are skipping it this year. What's all about that? And then before we finish up, the president's supporters will forgive Congress for many things, but if they do not get the Save America Act done, they will not forgive them for that. Everybody in Congress, especially those who don't do what they can or don't vote a certain way, I'm looking at you, John Thune, are absolutely going to be in the crosshairs of MAGA. So we'll talk about all that here today on the show. All right, let's hop to it here. Time for the Morning Wire. Semi-automatic storylines going rapid fire to catch you up on what is happening here across this city, state, country, world on this Tuesday, March 10th. Can you believe it? We're almost halfway through March already. Man, the time is flying. All right, start with the almanac for today. We will gain 3 minutes and 21 seconds of daylight today. Loving all that. Markets down a little bit after a monstrous rally yesterday. The president had a conversation with the media, press conference, I guess we call those, and he said, we're making great time. This thing, I think, is going to be done soon. And the markets absolutely took off. And after massive losses to start the day, there was a lot of green basically across the board yesterday. And cryptocurrency went up. Oil went down. It was an amazing turn. The president knows how to play financial markets. There's no doubt about that. This morning, though, we're giving back some of those gains. maybe a little irrational exuberance toward the end of the trading day yesterday. Dow is down 249 this morning. S&P 500 down 33. The NASDAQ is down 74. WTI crude oil, which we told you was darn near $120 a barrel when we started prepping for the show yesterday, is sitting right now at 87.95. So back to a decent place there. Gold up $111 today at 5,215. Silver up about 6% at 89.06. Bitcoin today pretty much unchanged from yesterday at 69,515. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas up 7 cents from yesterday at 353. North Dakota average price now over $3, 308. South Dakota 309. Minnesota 325. What's making headlines today? Oh, boy, is there a lot in the news today. At the Pentagon this morning, U.S. War Secretary Pete Hegseth warned that today will be, quote, yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes, intelligence more refined and better than ever. And he said also, last 24 hours, by the way, we saw Iran fire the lowest number of missiles that they had fired yet. Amid the all the war talk, the entire Iranian women's national soccer team has reportedly requested asylum in Australia. The team was in Australia for a qualifying match for the Women's World Cup when they refused to return to Tehran, citing fears of lethal retaliation. They would not sing the national anthem of Iran and kind of turned their back on the whole thing and said, if we go back, we're going to be dead. And so the Australian government is in a tough spot. President Trump says, I'll offer you guys asylum if you want to come to the U.S. Very interesting story going on there. From the forum this morning, this from a Rob Port column, that there is, we've been talking about this quite a bit, that there's basically a sea change going on in North Dakota politics. But it appears as though none of the statewide Republican incumbents, the governor, the congresswoman, the various commissioners, nobody is going to the party convention at the end of the month in Minot. They are not seeking the party's endorsement. Isn't that interesting there? Former public service commissioner and current Congresswoman Julie Fedorchik announced this to WDAY radio yesterday, saying that she prefers to take her message right to the voters, rather than focusing on a small room of delegates in Bismarck. The Valley News Live newsroom reports today that fireworks are returning to Mount Rushmore on July 3rd to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States. Observers say this is a symbolic victory for the region. The display had been a point of contention, was previously canceled due to environmental and fire safety concerns. But the organizers say they want this to be the most spectacular display that they have ever had. WDAY Radio reports Fargo Convention Center Committee is going to hear the final two proposals today for that massive new facility in town. This is the Phase 2 presentation where they're getting deep into the weeds on how they would make it all happen there. Edwin Salisbury reports that dumb name doesn't sound right. I might have typed that in wrong. The gentleman Salisbury, who was going to run for Minnesota House District 4A, says he is going to pull out of that race, citing personal reasons and a desire to focus on his family. The Forum reports today that the West Fargo School Board has approved the addition of 16 new full-time equivalent teaching positions for the upcoming school year, 10 elementary, 4 middle school, and 2 high school positions there. The suspect in the Williston deputy-involved shooting has been identified as Sean Payne, 32 years of age, of Williston. It happened early Monday morning. This is about a week ago now. Deputies were responding to a domestic disturbance involving a firearm in the 14200 block of Highway 2. Upon arrival, they encountered Payne, who was armed. Shots were fired. He later died at a hospital. 2 other individuals were hospitalized for injuries, but the name was announced yesterday. And West Fargo Police Department reports that they are nearing full strength. They are currently looking to fill their final 4 officer vacancies. How about that? Getting there. We love it when law enforcement is fully staffed, fully funded. and all of those good things. All right, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, story of the day. The president speaks on the war. The stock market catches fire. What did he say that made everybody breathe a sigh of relief? We'll talk about that as we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show here on this Tuesday morning. Be right back. Story of the day is what happened actually yesterday. In the final hour or so of trading in the stock market, we went from big losses to gains. Oil prices went from way high to, I'm not going to say way low, but quite a bit lower than where they were. Dropped about 10 bucks a barrel during his speech there. And the president said, I've got five things, my kind of top five takeaways from what he said yesterday. Number one, the president continues to downplay the conflict. I call it a war just because it feels like that's what it is to me. I don't know how long this will go, but it shows every sign of being a war or that it could potentially become a full-scale war. So I'm going with war, but he calls it a little excursion, a short-term excursion. And he said the war is, quote, very complete and pretty much ahead of schedule. It says 80% of Iran's missile launchers, their Navy, and their communications have already been wiped out. Number two, the president again repeated that they had gained intel that Iran was planning to attack the U.S. and its allies, including Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE. He says it was 100% within 1 week if he had not acted first. We've heard a week and a half, 2 weeks. First time I've heard 1 week. So this was an imminent threat that the president said he and his intelligence officials were able to ascertain. Takeaway number three, he put his fist down toward Iran if they attempted to block Strait of Hormuz or disrupt any U.S. Efforts to move global oil out of the region. He said the U.S. will hit them 20 times harder than before. And he said he's saving the most important targets, like Iran's electrical grid, if needed. He gave a little bit of a legislative ultimatum, too, kind of changed topics a little bit there. But he said he repeated his ultimatum he made Sunday on social media, on Truth Social, that he's not going to sign any new laws until Congress passes a Save America Act. And this was really heartwarming for me to hear, because I want to make sure we don't lose sight of what's happening here with this, because this is a massive storyline to me. He said that election security supersedes everything else and is the priority even over wartime funding or government operations. It's exactly what I wanted to hear. And when he was talking about the Iranian elementary school where the Tomahawk missile took out more than 160 people, the president said, we don't know yet if it was ours or others. He said there are a couple other countries that have Tomahawk missiles. Now, some people are saying, well, the only people that have them are like us and Britain and somebody else, and it wasn't Britain and that's somebody else. But the president said, we're investigating it. We'll let you know. But the media is very focused on this, like who did this, who fired that missile. And the president said it's still under investigation. Now, earlier this morning, Pete Hegseth kind of took the ball and ran with it from the president yesterday. And the Secretary of War, Hegseth, I thought had a fantastic press conference this morning. It was succinct. It was only about 4 minutes. And it was two things. It was, number one, establishing where we're at and what we're doing and reassuring Americans that we've got the might and the strength to do this. And then I probably won't be able to get to this in this segment. I'll play this for you at the end. He went to the good book to give a little comfort at a time of war for the country. And this is a little bit about what this sounded like this morning as Hegseth began his comments.
For 47 years, these barbaric savages in the Iranian regime have murdered our brothers in arms, my guys, your guys, our guys, through their terrorist proxies and cowardly attacks. Now they race toward a nuclear bomb to hold the world hostage. The Iranians have targeted and killed thousands of my American brothers. That race to a nuclear bomb, President Trump will never allow it. Not now, not ever, not on our watch. The mullahs are desperate and scrambling. Like the terrorist cowards they are, they fire missiles from schools and hospitals, deliberately targeting innocents, because they know their military is being systematically degraded and annihilated. Iran's neighbors, and in some cases, former allies in the Gulf, they've abandoned them. And their proxies, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and Hamas, either broken, ineffective, or on the sidelines. Iran stands alone, and they are badly losing. On day 10 of Operation Epic Fury, we are winning with an overwhelming and unrelenting focus on our objectives, which are the same as the day I gave my first briefing here on Operation Epic Fury. They're straightforward, and we are executing them with ruthless precision. One, destroy their missile stockpiles, their missile launchers, and their defense industrial base, missiles and their ability to make them. Two, destroy their navy. And three, permanently deny Iran nuclear weapons forever. It's a laser-focused, maximum authority mission delivered with overwhelming and unrelenting precision. No hesitation, no half measures. As President Trump declared yesterday, we're crushing the enemy in an overwhelming display of technical skill and military force. We will not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated. But we do so. We do so on our timeline and at our choosing. For example, today will be yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes. Intelligence more refined and better than ever. So that's on one hand. On the other hand, the last 24 hours have seen Iran fire the lowest number of missiles they've been capable of firing yet. Just the bifurcation, just the trend lines that we talked about on our first briefing. You see, this is not 2003. This is not endless nation building.
Listen here.
Under those types of quagmires we saw under Bush or Obama. It's not even close. Our generation of soldier will not let that happen again, and nor will this president, who very clearly ran against those kinds of never-ending, nebulously scoped missions. Those days are dead. Instead, we're winning decisively with brutal efficiency, total air dominance, and an unbreakable will to accomplish the president's objectives on our timeline. We stay locked on the target because here at the Department of War, that's our job.
Okay, that's our job. I think those comments mean a lot. The president had said last week, we're going to stay here as long as we have to. There may be boots on the ground. You do what you got to do. Well, these comments today make me feel like the president has been very clear to his people that we cannot have this hanging out there as something that's going to go on and on. So, again, you can get really wound up about, well, you know, the president said this and he made it seem like that or whatever. I would say again, listen to what or watch what the president does, not so much the way he says it, because you don't know what the words are intended to do with the enemy or the non-believers. All right, so good stuff there. When we come back, there's a new candidate for Fargo City Commission, but he's no stranger to Fargo government. We'll talk to Scott Brecky next. Need a new garage door or fast, reliable repairs? Well, OnTrack Garage Door has you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs. OnTrack Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values. Quality work, honest service, and a team you can trust. Let them get you on the right track with OnTrack. Call them at 701-793-4246 today. One of the big storylines going on here in the Red River Valley is what's going on in Fargo City Commission. There's going to be big changes to the commission here once we get through the June elections. And remember that you tend to think November is general election time. Well, not in the city of Fargo, it's not. When you have June elections here, that's when you get your school board, city councils, and all these other things. And so we've got a city commission race where we're going to have two commissioners that are going to be terming out. And then you've got a mayor as well that is going to be leaving as well. So we could have the potential for a significant change in the makeup of the city commission. And that would be a good thing for those of us who have watched the city of Fargo for a while and want a little bit more sanity in some of the decision-making there. Scott Brecky is one of the candidates that is vying for that position. And I believe Scott and Tony Gehrig are the two that I have heard that have thrown their hat in the ring for city commission. There's probably more than that that want to be mayor, but two guys going for the open spots on city commission. And Scott Brecky has been kind enough to join us here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for having me on this morning.
You got it. Appreciate you making time for me. So thanks for doing this. So a lot of us know that because of the announcement you made, we kind of did a little digging. You're part of the Fargo Liquor Control Board, so you've got some knowledge of what happens within the city. But a lot of us don't know a whole lot about you. Where did you grow up, and how long have you lived in Fargo?
Oh, yeah. So personally, my family has long ties to the community. Both my parents grew up in Fargo. My dad was a successful small business owner in Fargo for about 40 years. I was born and raised in Fargo. I grew up in the Roosevelt neighborhood, went to Roosevelt, Ben Franklin, and then graduated for Fargo North.
Okay, so a North grad, go Spartans. So your dad was a business.
Yes, absolutely.
So your dad was a business owner here. What kind of line of work was your dad in? What kind of work did he do?
He had a commercial cleaning company that he had in Fargo that was very successful, and a lot of that was based in downtown Fargo. So I would say professionally, after I graduated high school, I started my 26-year career with big box retail. Started off in entry-level positions and worked my way up quickly to management, including up to a general manager. I worked in about 14 different locations with the overall sales budget of anywhere from $70 million to $100 million, with anywhere from 200 to 300 employees directly reporting to me. In that time, you know, we would talk a little bit about business, just overall financials, developing talent. And one of the things that I really liked for the companies that I worked for is about being a servant leader and being active in the community, which I've always had a project that I've been involved in, whether it's been at the Fargo Sandbag Centrals, whether it's been at the Boys and Girls Club, or now currently I volunteer at the Fargo Liquor Board. So this is not part of my career path necessarily to run for city commission, but the opportunity hit me at the right time in my career and personal life, and I believe that I can have a positive impact.
Yeah, thanks for the background. Lots of great details there. Thanks for sharing all that with us. So you got to really want to do that, though, right? The city commission is not something you think, you know, maybe I'll give that a try. You got to really want to do it. Tell me why you want to do this.
Well, I think with any business strategy or any city, there's a kind of a circular three aspect of it is to attract, grow, and retain. Okay, so Fargo, you know, from growing up, that was one of the biggest opportunities was to attract businesses, to attract people to Fargo. You know, when I grew up, it was about 40,000 people. We're at 132,000 now. So we've attracted a lot of businesses. We've attracted people. We've grown our community. And now we're in a spot right now where we need to retain it. You know, we need to retain people from leaving the area. We need to retain businesses. We don't want to see businesses go under. We don't want to see businesses move out of the Fargo area. And doing that, you know, I think of the goals I would have as a city commissioner, the things that I believe in, is you got to look at tax incentives. You got to look at the reducing and removing specials. And I think one of the key things that continues to be an issue is, or we get caught off guard, is we got to do a line by line on the controllable expenses on the city budget. We got to make sure that we don't get caught off guard on why we're spending X amount of money on something like that the average taxpayer does not agree with. And then, honestly, to retain people, people got to feel safe in Fargo. We got to make sure that we support the law enforcement, and this is where the city commission needs to give clear direction to the law enforcement on what they see and work together and to make sure that we have a mutual understanding of enforcing and making not just statistically having a good report, but also how we feel. You know, you can do the different statistics anyway on as far as is crime up or is crime down, but we need to make sure that there's a police presence in the Fargo area where people feel overall safe. So. Sorry, I got a little tongue-tied there for a second.
No, hey, we've all tripped over statistics, my man. I'm telling you, that's one of those words that even if you haven't had a couple of beers in you, that word can trip you up. So no worries there. You talked about tax incentives. This has been a really good debate, and I'm one of these guys. Maybe I'm weird, probably am, but I think that there can be room for these within a city's growth plan, but you can't spend like a drunken sailor or you're going to lose everything that you gained by deferring some of this revenue that can come in down the line. There's been talk, maybe it's too long, maybe 15, 20 years is too much, and we all know with the 3% cap from the state that the cities can spend, it gets a little more problematic. But just the philosophy of the tax incentives, whether it's TIFs, pilots, Renaissance Zone, whatever, where do you stand on that? I know that could be like its own two-hour show, but where do you stand on that issue?
You know, as of right now, I think that we're in an environment with the city debt that we need to draw a line in there. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to, let's say, incentives where you look at my old neighborhood in the Roosevelt neighborhood. There's a lot of incentives that could be going to single family homes that I don't think a lot of people would be very opposed to on a case by case basis. But, you know, right now, I think that's where it's important to do a detailed dive into the budget to find out where our money's coming from and where our debt is. And then how are we going to address that and move forward?
So if I'm hearing you right, Scott, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think it's important to be clear on this. I don't hear you saying, no, we can never do these, and I'm a hardliner to eliminate all of them, but you're saying we've got to be really smart about how we do it, maybe change the way we're doing it. Am I hearing you right?
Yeah, you never want to, obviously you don't want to just say, hey, we're never going to do this, because, you know, you don't want to draw a fine line like that. But, you know, as far as on some of the areas where, you know, you mentioned Tony Gehrig before. You know, Tony's been on different city commission meetings where in the past where he said, are you going to not build here because you don't get this tax exception? Mm-hmm. Well, no, we're still going to build here. So in a case like that, so are we just giving away free money in that aspect? Mm-hmm. You know, so I do think in this environment right now, we need to take a very serious look at it, and I would say that it is a no. But in the future, I mean, I would not be necessarily opposed to it if there is, you know, for residential, that there is some little incentive for making Fargo residential homes better as well.
Okay, so it sounds like you're more of a no than a yes, but your exception might be not necessarily for commercial, but for residential.
Yeah, there's, and I think we've done that in the past as well, as far as looking at different exceptions, whether it's been different for special assessments or different tax incentives for residential as well.
Yeah. Okay. I'm always curious to ask. Is there anybody on the city commission right now where you would say, you know what, my philosophy lines up pretty well with this person? I see a lot of myself in so-and-so. Is there anybody that you would say you align with right now on the city commission?
Well, I'm on the liquor board with Dave Pepcorn, and I really like Dave, and I agree with him. I agree with Michelle Turnberg, and like you mentioned before as well, there's two empty seats that's going to be on the city commission, and both Tony and I are running, and I have always been a big supporter of Tony. I think he brings a lot of expertise to the city, and if I was going to vote today, I'd vote for him and I'd vote for myself.
Okay, well, I would too, darn right. If you're going to vote, if you're in it, you got to vote for yourself. Heck yes. Okay, so. Yeah. If I asked you, we talked about some of the financial stuff, and I think we gain, based on what you've said here so far, we kind of understand where you're at on the spending issue. If you just kind of step out to a 10,000-foot view, what are your principles, Scott, of What makes a city successful? Like, what has to be in place for a city to be successful?
That's a good question. You know, if you go back to where we look at attracting and then growing and then retaining, so without one of those, you know, you have to have something in the city where you are attracting businesses. And you're attracting people. You want to have a good community. You want to continue to grow. You want to continue to be viable in the community. And then the one thing that I think is probably our biggest challenge right now is safety. We got to make sure that people feel safe in the Fargo area. And that's where I think our community is asking for. I think that's where we're also asking for reduction in some of these different taxes you see on some of these different cities that are coming up now. If you looked at the news article and like in the Horace area where you got people that have residential homes that are getting taxed, you know, $30,000 on a special assessment.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing about that is when you get taxed that special assessment, that actually goes again on your property tax. So now you wind up getting taxed on top of the tax.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. There's a lot of work to be done there. Maybe that's our next conversation. How would we do that, getting rid of the special assessments? It's a big question, but one that definitely needs to be talked through. Scott, thanks so much for the time. Great to meet you. Appreciate you making time today.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Take care. Thanks so much. All right. Well, we now know the first full NDSU football season. Okay. We now know what the schedule will look like for NDSU's first year in FBS football. It's all happening really fast. The first home game is August 29th, and they will be playing FBS football in the Mountain West Conference. So here's what the schedule looks like. Home game against Jacksonville State, followed by a home game with Fordham. Then they go to Colorado Springs to play Air Force and at Sacramento State. Next, they're home on October 3rd to Wyoming. That'll be kind of fun. The Bowl, right? Craig Bowl, coaching of both schools. Then at UNLV on October 10th, that'll be a fun one. There'll be a lot of green and gold in Vegas that weekend, I promise you that. Then Nevada comes to Fargo on the 17th of October. The Bison then travel to New Mexico. After that, they're home to Texas El Paso. Then on November 14th, they're at Honolulu, taking on the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. On the 21st of November, home game against Northern Illinois, and the regular season finale is at San Jose State. There is no Mountain West Championship game on the schedule right now, but I believe that they do play a championship game in the Mountain West. So depending on how it goes, they might get another opportunity there. Well, a story broke yesterday that Bison fans started sharing and tweeting and retweeting. And there is a college football analyst named Colin Wilson, and he does predictive analysis on schedules. And he says that in the FBS, there are six schools that are projected to be betting favorites in all 12 of their regular season games this year. And one of them is North Dakota State. The others, Notre Dame, Georgia, Penn State, Texas Tech, and Utah. I'm just telling you, when the Bison made their move back in, 2003 or whatever, to make the transition to Division I sports, it was a day like this that Joe Chapman was sitting back going, "You guys, just wait. You're going to see. This is going to work out great." And we were all like, "Man, will we ever be able to win a 1AA playoff game? Like, could Fargo ever have a home game in the playoffs?" And here we are. This is just absolutely surreal. But, oh my gosh, is it fun here. So Wilson goes on to say, if you just take a look at the teams that are on that schedule, it looks very good for the Bison. And I cannot disagree with him based on the Sagarin ratings, which is a ratings website that I use a lot. It's kind of like, if you're familiar with college hockey, it's kind of like the pairwise rankings, where they statistically tell you who's the best team, who's the worst team, and who should be ahead of who among all Division I teams, FBS and FCS. Now, last year, at the end of last season, the Bison finished 40th. They were the number one team in FCS, even though Illinois State ended up making the championship game and Montana State ended up winning it. But the Bison were ranked the best team of all those, the 40th best football team in the country, regardless of division. And when you go down the line to see, okay, well, who would be next in the Mountain West Conference? You have to go all the way down to 61. That was Boise State. After them, San Diego State at number 69. Thing is, neither of those teams are in the Mountain West anymore. That's why they were looking for teams like NDSU. So then you keep going down and you get UNLV at number 74. And on a neutral field, if you put NDSU up against UNLV, the way the rating system works is that NDSU would be an 8-point favorite against who was I talking about? UNLV. So, okay, so you go by that and you say, if that's the deal, maybe these teams get a little better. Maybe NDSU drops off just a little bit. Bison had a really good team. They'll have a new quarterback this year and all of that. But it is not crazy to think that NDSU could be favored in all of these games. The non-conference games, I don't know. I mean, you got Jacksonville State. Sure, they made that transition to FBS a while back. They're okay, but that game is at home. Fordham, same thing. I don't know anything about Fordham, but you got to feel like, you know, they're probably in pretty good shape there with that particular opponent. And then you look at the other games here and you just say, you know, gosh, there's nobody that really scares you. The road trip at Hawaii, that's going to be tough because, you know, talk about a culture shock. But if they can make it a business trip, sure, why not? At UNLV will be tough as well. So those are the games that kind of stand out to me. At New Mexico will be tough as well. New Mexico, they finished the season in a pretty good spot there. I think it was either New Mexico or New Mexico State that played the Gophers fairly tough in the bowl game there. But those are three road games, at UNLV, at New Mexico, at Hawaii, that could be tough. Somebody asked me, what do I think on the schedule? I said, you know what, I'll say 10-2. I'll say 10-2. To play FBS week after week, even though honestly the best FCS teams and NDSU played them in the Missouri Valley aren't that much different than these teams, maybe even very comparable, but you got some weird road trips. But on the flip side of it, I will say this. Anybody who comes to the Fargo Dome for the first time will not be ready for what hits them. The fans are going to be excited. I believe we're going to get back to sellout crowds at the Fargo Dome again, which we had for a while, but the crowds drifted off over the last few years for a number of different reasons. But you get a full Fargo Dome, ask some of these teams that have come in there. And a couple of coaches in the Mountain West have taken teams in here when they were with FCS schools, and they know. So that's going to be a huge home field advantage for the Bison. It could be really fun. And if they can get that waiver that Matt Larson's looking at, it's not impossible to think that the Bison could have a shot at the FBS playoff this next year. This is all so bizarre. Hour 2 of the program coming up next. Hour 2, Steve Alsham Show, brought to you in part by Dakota Dental Implant in Fargo. Getting a full new smile in one day. How does that sound? Maybe you're somebody who has skipped those family photos. You don't want to smile much even at the holidays because you just know that smile just doesn't look the way you want it to. Well, Dr. Matt Eaton is here to help you. He's got extensive advanced training in implant dentistry. And to do this right, it takes passion, training, and the right technology. But I would also argue that it takes a guy who really cares about people. That's who Dr. Matt is. He recently gave away a smile to a veteran who needed that. And I don't know that that's been announced yet, but that was a really cool thing that he did there. He will carefully plan out with you exactly what your smile is going to look like when you're done, before you even begin the treatment. So you get to see what it's going to look like ahead of time. It's like having an architect kind of give you a diagram of what a building might look like when it's done. He can do that for you. And many patients are able to walk out the same day with a strong, natural-looking, full smile. Compassionate team, comfortable experience, financing options available. Why would you not call? DakotaImplant.com, DakotaImplant.com. That's where you find out more. Connect with them. Smile like you mean it at Dakota Dental Implant. All right, as you heard off the top of the hour news block from Fox News there, we've had a remarkable turnaround in the markets. We were down about 250 points on the Dow. We're now up about 250. S&P 500 is up 25. NASDAQ is up 135. Bitcoin is up about $3,000 at 71,000 some. So it's, boy, it's whiplash right now. I bet there's some people that do day trading that have made, probably and lost, too, a lot of money with the intraday swings. If you knew what to look for and just followed some of those, you know, volume cues, I suppose, as far as what's happening, it doesn't seem to be a lot of news-related content here that's moving things. You know, these companies that are flying up and flying down the charts are doing it without really announcing much. But it's just, it's a sentiment. It's an emotional game. And, of course, there's a lot of automated trading that goes on. So if you knew how to play that game, you probably do really well. Unfortunately, the good guys and the pros are really good at what they do. So, boy, markets, how about that? Crude oil down a little bit more. We started the day at 87, or started the morning when we started the show here at 9 o'clock at about 87 somewhere, $84 now a barrel on WTI crude. Boy, back pushing 80. How about that? So, yeah, it's amazing what's happening right there. All right, let's get into the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These stories kind of rise above for me. There's a lot of interesting stuff out there, but some stories just say to me, wow, you got to talk about this. This is crazy, or this is good, or this is bad, or this tells us a little bit of something about who we are or the world around us. I've got three stories that I think qualify for that today. Story number one, it's impossible for me to ignore the war in Iran when we're talking about the key three. Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, said in a press conference just a little bit ago this morning that today will be, quote, yet again our most intense day of strikes inside Iran. The most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes, intelligence more refined and better than ever. You can tell they're trying to demoralize the enemy just with the verbiage that they're using. And Hegseth said as well that the last 24 hours have seen Iran fire the lowest amount of missiles that they have fired yet. Very interesting. President Trump yesterday said they've taken out 80% of Iran's military. So that's story number one. The other big news from yesterday, of course, was that the president said, we got this thing under control. This thing could be ending shortly. And that's why the market has turned around, and it hasn't really stopped ever since. So that's story number one. Story number two, this is a fascinating story to me. Maybe it's because I love sports, but five Iranian women soccer players have received asylum in Australia now after President Trump weighed in on the subject yesterday. Now, they might have done it anyway, but the president said, hey, Australia, give these guys asylum. My gosh, you can't send them back. So the story goes that in the first game of the recent Women's International Tournament, I wish I knew what the tournament was. I guess it doesn't matter, but it was in an international tournament. The Iranian players on day one of the tournament refused to sing their national anthem before their first game. They ended up losing to South Korea. And many people back in Iran, especially within the government regime, viewed that as an act of resistance. One Iranian commentator, who probably had to say it, said it is the pinnacle of dishonor. The team did not speak about this or make any statements of it, but this was after Khomeini was overthrown by the U.S. Military. The players did sing the anthem and saluted the country before their next two games, which they lost to Australia and the Philippines. Now, it came to President Trump's attention that, yeah, you know, these ladies have to go back to Iran after this. And, boy, you know, what's that going to be like? So the president puts out a statement on Truth Social saying Australia is making a terrible humanitarian mistake by allowing the Iran national women's soccer team to be forced back to Iran, where they will most likely be killed. Don't do it, Mr. Prime Minister. Give asylum. The U.S. will take them if you don't. Well, what do you suppose happened? Australia Home Affairs Minister, that's like Homeland Security, Minister Tony Burke made the announcement that they have granted asylum to the five members of the soccer team who have sought asylum. And he put out a statement then saying, I say to the other members of the team, the same opportunity is here. Australia has taken the Iranian women's soccer team into our hearts. Wow. I mean, think about that. Just the act of, I mean, they didn't have any assurances that they'd be able to, you know, seek asylum there in Australia. For them not to sing the national anthem, they had to have known that what they were doing was extremely risky, extremely. So good job by President Trump, kind of turning the temperature up. Good job by Australia, and a good job by those five ladies. I mean, what talk about courage. Holy smokes. I think in this country, we've gotten a little too soft lately, too many of us. These five, man, I'd like to have them on the Steve Alsham Show. That's for sure. So that's story number two for me. Story number three is courtesy of CNBC and the National Association of Realtors with some real estate trends. And I've been really thinking about this a lot with the interest rate picture, the economy, stock market, and just the supply of homes that are on the market. Like, we continue to have every reason to book why home prices should go down, except they keep going up. And Redfin, the real estate brokerage, reported this morning that more sellers who delisted their homes last fall, taking their home off the market because nobody was buying, are now relisting them. Nearly 45,000 homes that were delisted were relisted for sale in January. That's the biggest January jump in that number since Redfin began keeping track of this more than a decade ago. About 4% of the homes that were on the market in January had been taken off back last year. Other notes from this story that I thought were interesting is that the median price of a home sold in February in the country was $398,000, an increase of 0.3% year over year. So prices continue to go up, even though supply continues to grow. Sales continue to be strongest in the highest price category, properties listed at 1 million or above. It takes longer to sell a home these days. The average time of listing before a sale is 47 days right now, and that's up from 42 days a year ago. First-time home buyers represented 34% of total sales, which is an increase from 31% a year ago. That's interesting, isn't it? The prices go up. The million-dollar homes are on the rise. It's taken longer, but it's first-time home buyers that are getting involved. So either they're buying expensive homes or they're finding those homes that are a little bit lower priced and maybe paying up a little bit there. You might be wondering about investor sales. This is interesting to me that investors sold, like the BlackRocks, right, when they buy a whole bunch of properties and not just people like you and me buying them. 16% of sales unchanged from a year ago. So we've got some stability in that number there. I think the housing stuff is fascinating because it just says so much about who we are as a country and how we feel about things. So I love these numbers here, and I'm kind of a numbers geek, as you know. And hopefully you are as well, because then you'll find these stories a little bit more interesting. All right, it is 16 past the hour. When we come back, best thing I heard all day, Greg Gutfeld on The Five yesterday was done trying to be politically correct. He said it like it was, and I think there's a lot of truth there. And I think for a lot of us, we got to get past ourselves in order to have honest conversations about what's happening with Islamic terrorism. We'll do that when we come back on The Steve Alsham Show. All right, best thing I heard all day was yesterday on The Five. Greg Gutfeld was dropping some truth bombs. And I think I'm going to title this segment, You Have to Stop Caring What People Think of You. Some of us learn this early in life. Some of us it takes a little longer. But you really have to stop caring what people think of you. Whatever people say, whatever they think, it really doesn't matter. And honestly, most people aren't paying all that close attention anyway. But in this day and age of social media, it feels like, and the cancel culture, it feels like that if you get on the wrong side of some people, that they can make your life miserable. Not really necessarily true. So you have to stop caring what people think of you. Greg Gutfeld has learned this. So let me start by saying we have had two events now, very high profile events that have occurred in the last week or so. Over the weekend, there was an attempted bombing at a protest outside the New York City mayor's residence. It's called Gracie Mansion. The NYPD and FBI are investigating it as an act of ISIS-inspired terrorism. Two guys were charged after throwing improvised explosive devices. One explicitly cited ISIS, and the other made a symbol that some say pledged allegiance to the group. I don't know, but people that know this stuff say, yes, this is a symbol of Islamic terrorism sympathy. And this happened just a week after we had that shooting in Austin, Texas, where the shooter was found to have had some social media posts with anti-Semitic views, pro-Iran, his clothing, you know, definitely aligned that way as well. And the FBI is investigating that as state-sponsored terrorism. Okay. So Greg Gutfeld on The Five yesterday said, you know what? I am done trying to be politically correct about all this stuff.
Is it Islamophobic to wonder or suggest that Islam is not as welcoming to other religions as religions are to them? It's just, I just wonder, because I never hear this equation in reverse. I'm glad that the cops might have saved the mayor's wife's life. It's going to make it hard for her to like the ISIS post, though. That's going to be tough for her. You know, Zohran is a naturalized immigrant, and many of these violent, hateful people are the same. I don't think that this idealized nation of immigrants that we talk about means anything unless there's a common denominator. We've forfeited the expectation of assimilation. We no longer even, we don't, it's not like we don't even demand it. We don't even expect it. Mm-hmm. And we're too scared to reject their anti-American positions, all for the sake of appearing tolerant. This is what you get, suicidal empathy. We extend our hand, they want to chop it off. There is a vibe shift going on over the last 20 years. When you see the media covering for terrorists, that's different than, say, 2006, you know, when the mayor leads with Islamophobia after a terrorist attack, that's interesting. Neglecting that this so-called Islamophobia actually is arising from Americophobia. They don't like the West. And this is a public and brazen persona. We see it and we're not allowed to do anything. But what drives me nuts, and forgive me if I, this is just my opinion. I don't want this to happen. But what drives me, yes, I do. Do I? I don't know. Anyway, what drives me nuts is we can decapitate Iran, kill their leader, and we can't rub out two parasites on the street who just tried to kill a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of good stuff there from Gutfeld, and willing to say what a lot of people won't. Intelligence reports from DHS and FBI are showing us that these are not seen by law enforcement as random coincidences. This is not coincidental here. And these security agents are on high alert. The obvious war in Iran right now, heightened threat environment. And law enforcement is saying, be on the lookout for people who might be inspired by some of these things, whether it's a lone wolf or a sleeper cell or whatever, but people may be wanting to take action domestically. And unlike the 9/11 attacks from many years ago, the way it works nowadays is that the terrorism that is bred, it often works through online radicalization. You know, ISIS doesn't have to send someone into the U.S. to train you now. They just provide the permission through easily accessible information on the dark web or social media for somebody here to get fired up and start lashing out. Now, there is a measurable uptick in radicalization and plots linked to Islamic extremism. We know this over the last couple years or so. You see that, and just ask anybody in law enforcement, FBI, Homeland Security. And listen to me carefully. Acknowledging this isn't bigotry. It's threat assessment. We're not seeing this from Methodists. You don't see some guy running up, Jesus saves, and then they throw a bomb at a bunch of people. You don't see this from Buddhists who are pulling out their ARs, shooting people, pumping you full of lead in the name of Buddha. We're not seeing any of that. It's not just that there's a little bit on one side and there's a little bit less on the other. We're not seeing any of that on the other side. But more and more and more, we are seeing something about Allah, Allahu Akbar. We're seeing something about Islam. We're seeing about anti-Semitism, which, by the way, I will never understand how our country and so many people in our country, not you and me, But I'll never understand how so many people in our country, and people who should know better, people in leadership, people who run things, and people who are even elected to represent all of us, hate Jews, hate Israel. When did this become okay? We have fought for decades in this country to try to remove the bigotry, remove the hatred, remove the racism from our country so we can have a people that are free to live freely. And all of a sudden, for some reason, now we're just going to suspend this because we don't like a conflict overseas, which started between two countries that are not named USA. What is happening here? So the danger of labeling large groups, right, is that you're implying that everybody in that group is the source of the problem. Now, security experts have said these are outliers who have been radicalized by a violent interpretation of Islamic code. And there is probably, I don't know this, but I have to believe that the vast majority of Muslims are actually terrified of this or working against it. I'm sure there's a fair amount of people who say, well, you know what? Yeah, if things happen in the pursuit of the holy war, then that happens. But you cannot tell me there are not peaceful Muslims out there. It's kind of like what we talked about with the Somalis a couple weeks ago in Minneapolis. But you are lying to yourself and anybody else and insulting everybody's intelligence and burying your head in the sand if you cannot at least look at this and say there is a danger here that we cannot dismiss. It makes no sense to lump entire people groups together. You don't need to do that. But what you need to do is crack down hard when someone does something wrong, and it doesn't matter what group they are in. You cannot be afraid to call out the action because you might feel like you're stepping on toes of a group of people. That does not matter. If we cannot call this out for what it is, we will lose the ability to understand the problem. And if we start doing that, and if we're not courageous enough to be called whatever ism that you want to call me, then we're going to lose the ability to have a country and run a country effectively. You can't step out on a sunny day and expect to get rained on and think that you're thinking clearly. That's my thoughts. Want to hear yours coming up next. Oh, some good stuff at PetroServe USA today. Here are your lunch specials. Get ready. In Valley City today, beef tips and gravy, Harwood beef stew, meatloaf or beefy noodles at West Main Avenue, scalloped potatoes and ham at 12th Avenue. At 205 NP Avenue, Tater Tot Hot Dish. In Euland, Sloppy Joe's. 45th Street, Chicken Fettuccine. Chef's Choice at Ada today. Castleton has chicken and gravy. You can get some Swedish meatballs at Glendon. Bacon Cheeseburger Hot Dish in Wahpeton. Now that sounds good. And Cheyenne Chef's Choice as well. Lots of good stuff over there. PetroServe USA helping America fuel better. It would be impossible to finish my thoughts from last segment. It would be impossible for 100 reasons to say, let's deport all the Muslims. All right. It would be impossible even if you wanted to do it. And that wouldn't solve anything anyway. But just like you wouldn't let someone in your house who you think might hate your kids, it absolutely needs to shape the immigration policy we have going forward. Okay. What's done is done. We cannot do anything about what has happened up until this point. But let's pay attention here. And going forward, let's put the pressure on our elected officials wherever and whenever we can to not take unnecessary chances. This goes back to the whole merit-based immigration. And let's let the record show what immigration under Obama and Biden has included, not completely defined by, but what it is included in the last 20 years. Maybe this was unforeseeable. I don't know. But if you ignore what everybody knows to be true, then you are leading other people down the path of being not only low IQ, but just poorly informed citizens as well. And we cannot give up this fight to speak truth. And going back to how I began that whole rant before, you have to stop caring what people think of you. And I think for the most part we have. 5 years ago, if someone called one of us a racist, many of us, not all, but many of us are like, what? No, wait. Oh, hang on here. Whoa. Now it's like, yep, sure. Right. I'm a racist. Like, whatever. Let's get the list out of the way now. All the things that I'm anti and I hate this and that. Fine. I hate all this. Now let's have a conversation about what's next, because they never they never have hoped that the conversation would get to something where you argue this on merit. It is all about the fear. And if you lose the fear and you don't care anymore what people say about you, well, then it doesn't matter at all. So we've got to be willing to say what needs to be said, and we have to be willing to call this out for what it really is. And if we don't do that, then we're just asking for it again. And more and more and more, you're going to get more and more of what you had. And so stop caring what everybody thinks of you, and don't give up the fight to jump in on this. What you need to do is you need to crack down harder. And we need to call it out when people won't do that, because this is a quote-unquote protected group. On any side, conservative, liberal, doesn't matter. People should not be treated differently because of who they are. And just because the government in place right now agrees or doesn't agree, that's not the rationale that makes any sense. Long term, you get a safer, more sophisticated, and more prosperous society when you forget about what group somebody belongs to and start looking at them for the merits of who they are and what they have done. 701-271-1100. I thought Greg Gutfeld nailed it yesterday with that commentary. And not being scared to say, is anybody out here seeing what I'm seeing here? And I'm really glad that he came out and said what he did. And of course, they're going to call him, right, whatever name in the book. But again, if we don't care about that, then those things don't go very far. And then the left has lost their big weapon of fear that good and decent people don't want to be called names. 701-271-1100 is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Your thoughts on what Gutfeld had to say. What did he not say that he should have, or did he go too far at all? Maybe you're listening today and you say, you know, what he said there, I have a problem with what he said. And I would love to hear from you about that. I think good and decent people can come together and debate things that we don't all agree on if we are all coming at it from the perspective of we want the best for our country. So let's hear your thoughts on that. 271-1100. You can email us as well, studio@flagfamily.com. I did get an email, by the way, a couple minutes ago from a group called Say No to the Casino at Moorhead.org. Say No to the Casino at Moorhead.org. And they are concerned about this new casino that is going to be put up outside of Moorhead. And they have formed a 501c4 nonprofit corporation named Say No to the Casino at Moorhead. So that's where the website comes from. They are trying to educate and inform the public about the damaging consequences, they say, associated with the development of a casino in Clay County. And as a nonpartisan group of citizens, we believe such a casino development will forever change the character of our local communities and cause multiple economic, social, and environmental harms to the residents of the entire area. And they say if you want to get more information and become involved, visit their website. Say No to the Casino at Moorhead.org. Going to try to get one of the organizers on maybe later this week to talk a little bit more about that. All right, 38 past the hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. So phone lines open for you if you want to weigh in on that. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening with the North Dakota Republican Party. It's getting real, as the kids like to say. Julie Fedorchuk sent an email announcement out to our newsroom yesterday saying that she is not going to attend the state convention. And I was reading the forum today. One of their columnists, Rob Port, goes through a list of all the people that are not going to be attending the state convention. And it looks like just about all the main characters, all the people that we know, are not going to be attending the state convention coming up in Minot a little bit later this month. And this is really interesting to me because in North Dakota, we've noticed that there's been, I don't want to say a chasm, but there has certainly been a divide in what's happening with the party. You have what I'll call the establishment, and I'll say the grassroots. And I know that's way overgeneralizing, but it's the best I can come up with in one or two words to give you some kind of clear identity here. But the incumbents that we have, the statewide incumbents, are all basically saying that we're not going to go to the convention. And the column goes on to say that Julie Fedorchuk is not going. She said that we're focusing on doing the hard work that North Dakotans elected me to do. There's a lot here, and I'm just focusing on winning the June 9th primary. So not going to the convention. She did last time. Drew Wrigley said the same thing. I'm taking my candidacy to the entire Republican and conservative electorate in the primary. The entire. I thought that was a key word. Michael Howe. I did not file to seek the convention endorsement. I attended a lot of district conventions, but am choosing not to attend the convention. I'll be seeking the nomination in the primary election. Levi Bachmeyer, former chair of one of the districts, said he is not seeking the state party's endorsement as well for education superintendent. Now, that's not a Democrat-Republican thing, but usually they'll try to get an endorsement if they align with that. Kirsten Baszler is a good example. She's kind of always done that. Public Service Commissioner Sherry Haugen-Hoffart, she is not going either. Jill Kringstad, a colleague on the commission, she is not going either. So this is good reporting here by Port to go through all these people that are not going to be going to the convention. I don't know how this ends, if it will require a change in either the quote-unquote establishment or the grassroots. Typically, the people that go to the party conventions are people that are they're closest to the people because they are the people. They're not in elected office. They're just kind of listening and hearing. So they have an important voice that we need to listen to, because sometimes, yes, even if we are of the right party, the right color, the right persuasion, sometimes being in office, we get a little used to the way things are. We get in a rut. We get in a trench. We get stuck in things. We have blind spots, and we get further away. The further you are away from the people, right? I mean, if I wanted to be a senator, for instance, it would be easy for me to spend a lot of time with people in D.C. and if I got elected and hang out with them. And yes, people will come to D.C. once in a while, but I don't get back probably as much to, you know, small town North Dakota as I am in the big city of D.C. And that's something I think you want to watch out for. And honestly, we've heard that from anybody and everybody. At the same time, I think the people at the grassroots level have to understand that the job of being in D.C. requires you to play some games once in a while to get things done. And you're not going to always get what you want. So there is some give and take there. I get it. Now, I'm more along the lines of the people that say, I'm mad as heck, I'm not going to take it anymore. But I think it's important not to make it personal either with the people that are trying. I think you call people out, and certainly I have, you have, everybody on the station probably has a time or two. But I'm hoping when we do that, it's not you idiot, you moron, what are you doing, but explain to me how this supports what grassroots North Dakotans think about this. Now, sometimes grassroots North Dakotans have a feeling of, I want things the way they have been, and we don't always. I'm this way. I'm one of the climate change hoax people, okay? I think the whole thing is a fabricated, it's a business. It's an enterprise to try to align power and money behind green energy, okay? And when I see these carbon dioxide pipelines, my initial reaction is, get these things out. What is this? Is stupid. What are we even doing? However, the businessman in me says, okay, maybe there's an opportunity. And if this is the way it is there a way I can support this project? Does it make sense? Does it help corn farmers? Does it help the state's economy? Without signing on to the climate change agenda, two things can be true at the same time. I don't know how this changes over time. What's going to happen that's going to make things change there? But it really feels like there is getting to be a wide gap between those who are in office and those who go to the convention. So does the convention still matter? Curious what you think about that. 701-271-1100 or studioflagfamily.com. We'll talk about that when we come back. Vision Ford Lincoln and Wappen is hiring in their sales team. That could mean a fantastic opportunity for you. Make money just by helping your friends, neighbors, family members, people who come into the dealership find the car, truck, or SUV they've been looking for. Put your career in overdrive at drivewithvision.com. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wappen and drivewithvision.com. Does the state convention matter anymore? I have made repeated requests to Matt Simon, the new party chair, to come on my show. It happened after the District 26 convention where 26, 28, one of the 20s, down in South Central North Dakota where there was the meeting that kind of got derailed by a group that came in that wanted to impose a different agenda. And I said, Matt, the state convention is coming up in a few weeks. I think it would be good to come on and just talk about, you know, how we're going to have a good convention when we've seen some signs of unrest. And he said he gave me a statement first. And I said, no, I'd like you to come on the show and talk about this so I can ask you about it and you can talk to the people directly. And he said, basically, Steve, I'll talk to you off the record or off the microphone. I'll talk to you on the phone, but I won't come on your show. I can't think of anything more disappointing for the new chair to have said than I will not come on a show where I basically outlined what the conversation was going to be. I'm not going to accuse him of anything or attack him or assault him in any way. I just want to hear somebody tell me, how do we have an orderly and important state convention when we have these things going on already? What is the party doing to make sure that there's effective communication, that things are cordial, whatever? Friend, I don't know what to tell you because Mr. Simon will not come on this show. And I have to wonder about what does the leadership look like going into the state convention with what we know right now? What are they doing? What are they talking about? I have no idea because we can't tell you. We cannot get the leader of the party to come on the show. So your guess is as good as mine, but based on what we're hearing over the last 24 hours, that none of the incumbents are going, I'm just wondering how much the state convention still really matters. Because a lot of these people, I think, are going to win fairly easily in their races. So, I mean, why are we doing it? What's the point? I get it. Those of you that are that will defend the party and will be there, say that there's a lot of good things happen. I'm not disagreeing on that. But when the most important part of it and the most important people, not most important, that's not the right way to say it. The most well-known people that are the incumbents that are likely going to win again are not going to be there. What does that say about the convention? I'm not making a statement. I'm asking what does it say about the convention? So if you got a comment on this, 701-271-1100 or studio@flagfamily.com. Easiest ways and quickest ways to make your voice heard. Let's go back to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. John is on the line, and he is joining us on the program here today. Hi, John.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Good. This sounds like my friend John Trandum. Good, sir. How are you today?
That it is. I'm really well, and I could talk for 2 hours about this topic, but I know you got more like 2 minutes, so I'll try and keep it short, but we can revisit it if you wish to, but I think the question you asked is whether or not the convention matters anymore. And I guess from my perspective, that depends on what you mean by matters. If you look back to 2024, we had two contested races in the primary. We had a governor's race and we had a race for Congress. Had those races been decided at the convention, each candidate would have probably spent, we'll say, several thousand dollars on, you know, merchandise and hats and T-shirts and balloons and getting their parade ready and their audio video guy. And they would have started campaigning the day after the convention adjourned. Instead, between those two campaigns, they spent a total of over $10 million and they campaigned against other Republicans for 2 full months before they spent a dime campaigning against a Democrat. Before they spent any media time campaigning against a Democrat, they fought amongst one another. So I think it matters in the sense that $10 million could literally have won every legislative seat on the ticket instead of going into two races to decide an inter-party disagreement. And you wouldn't have effectively given the Democrats all the ammunition they need to fire at you in the general election cycle, because your opponent dug up all the dirt and aired it publicly, as opposed to in a closed situation like a convention or like district meetings and so on and so forth. So I think it's tragic. I understand why the statewides are doing what they're doing right now, but I think it's unfortunate. And if you look back historically, Steve, the convention process is the process upon which the juggernaut that the Republican Party now is was built. Every candidate was endorsed by the convention up and until 2012, and the only exceptions are three. So that was the standard, and I hope we get back to that at some point, but there's going to be a lot of work required to get there.
John, you have, to no one's surprise, articulated this very, very well, and you've made some good points there. I wish we had more time to talk about this, and it's certainly a topic that we'll pick up again there, but thank you for giving us a balanced perspective on this one. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks for the opportunity, Steve.
Of course. Yep. Take care, John. Thanks very much. All right, friend, that'll do it for the Steve Ahlstrom Show today. Stay tuned. Scott Henin, what's on your program coming up next? I'm going to kind of follow up on what John said tomorrow on the show, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. So it's a great conversation, and we need to have it. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.